Okay. This is Ashley Werner with Liza in Fintel Library. It is February 25th, 2022. And so, yeah, I guess we'll just start with just introduce yourself and just start from the beginning about where you grew up, your childhood.
Okay. So my name's Liza. I don't have a pronoun preference. I grew up in Kentucky, in a small town. My mom is a doctor, and my dad ran a horseback riding resort. So I grew up kind of like in this small town, but also out in the mountains where the resort was. And we had 30 horses. So I grew up like baling hay and shoveling stalls and playing in the creek and all that rural mountain stuff. My mom is from Virginia. She's from Floyd County, where I live. And she grew up on the property that I live on right now. She left Floyd County when she was 17 and never moved back. And her parents died when she was in her early 20s. And she inherited some land that she never sold and held on to it. And so even though she never went back, she held on to it for 40 years. And then about 10 years ago, I started becoming really interested in this land and really wanted to move there. But so anyways, yeah, I grew up in a small town in like a upper middle class family, since my mom was a doctor. And yeah, it was a very interesting like mix of financial security and then living out on the farm and having this farm that didn't really make any money. So it's an interesting like blend of things. But yeah, so I graduated from high school and came to Virginia Tech and studied mathematics and got a minor in green engineering. But I became really interested in the food system and really wanted to learn more about food production and like specifically how people grew their own food, like sort of subsistence gardening and farming, and like how that played into food security. Specifically interested in rural areas. So when I graduated I graduated high school in 2008 and college in 2012. And then I took an AmeriCorps position I basically abandoned mathematics and took an AmeriCorps position in West Virginia doing school gardening projects. So I did that for a while and then for a year, and it was really interesting. I learned a lot. And then I got another AmeriCorps job out in Washington State, so I moved out there to Olympia and worked there for a year running their home gardening project. So that's where we built gardens for people with low incomes and gave them for free and gave them everything that they should need to have a successful gardening season, including free classes and seeds and starts and stuff. And that was amazing, and I loved that job so much that I came back and to Virginia Tech. So I really felt like Virginia was home, and went to grad school and studied home gardening and food security in rural Appalachia. And so I got my master's in horticulture, but did kind of more of a sociology project rather than a science project. And then when I graduated, I really like wanted to start a farm. Oh, I also like did an internship that during the summer, the grad school summer, because grad school is 2 years. So in the middle, I did an internship with a local farm because I wanted to learn more about larger scale gardening, but still small, but like larger than gardening. So I wanted to learn about small scale farming. And they just happened to be a flower farm, even though I didn't really care about flowers. And so I took that internship and fell in love with flower farming And so when I graduated from grad school, I was like, oh my God, I really want to start my own farm, but I have no money. And so I got to figure this out. So I took a job with Extension, Cooperative Extension, doing nutrition programming through the SNAP Ed program, which I don't know if you've heard of SNAP. SNAP is Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs, like food stamps. It's the same thing as food stamps, but it's like the new word, new title for it. So part of the SNAP budget from the USDA Farm Bill is SNAP education. So I worked for Virginia SNAP Ed doing education programming. So I did that for a couple years and saved up money and didn't want to continue doing it. So I quit and went back to the flower farm, worked there for a year, and then like somehow got the resources that, like as in community resources that I needed to start the, finally move to Floyd and start the farm. So then I'm farming now. But yeah, that was a pretty substantial background chunk of information.
Wow, you've done a lot with your life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I was just wondering about how it was going from horse, like being around horses in your childhood, going to flower farming.
I'm really glad I have a background in agriculture. Like, I'm really, really, really thankful for it. I didn't really like it when I was never a big horse person. My mom was a big horse person. I liked horses okay. My dad liked them okay. But we really started the farm because my mom loved horses. She still has two horses. My parents are separated, so they, like, my dad is, he's, like, totally abandoned horses. He, like, hates them now. Doesn't want to deal with them anymore ever again. He, like, won't even get another dog, you know? He's, like, over it, taking care of animals. But I liked, like, being outside. And that was, like, the biggest thing. We didn't really grow anything. We grew, like, alfalfa fields that we baled for the horses. And we did, like, it was an agritourism farm, so it was, like, very different. You know, people were coming to the, like, we were designing the farm so people would come there. And so it was just, like, a lot of people in and out. And then we did, like, a corn maze one year. And then we did, like, we grew some pumpkins one year. But pretty much, like, the only growing of plants that I did growing up was with my mom doing, like, she grew a couple tomatoes and flowers and stuff. So going from, like, it was, like, this very interesting, it's like I grew up being outside, but I never really cultivated plants until my senior year in college when I had my first garden. And then it's just, like, my gardens ended up getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and now I cultivate half an acre in flowers. And so it's, like, pretty, it's very different, but, my background with horses is really helpful. Especially since I do want to get animals someday, and I have lived with animals and helped, like, steward animals and slaughter them and stuff for food. So, not when I was a kid, when I was an adult. But, yeah, so it's different, but helpful.
Would you say you've noticed how different has it been from going to rural Kentucky to rural Virginia?
Well, the town I grew up in Kentucky, it's interesting. It's, like, it's rural, but, like, it's still a town. Like, I would, it's, like, I think there's, like, 10,000 people, maybe. And I grew up in the county seat, you know, Maysville. It was, like, this small town. And we had a Walmart. So, like, we were the biggest town around because we had a Walmart. And then we got Super Walmart. And so now everybody from all over is coming to Maysville now, which is really a funny way of thinking about the size of a town. But rural, where I live now is so much more rural. It's more like the town I grew up in Kentucky, the town with the Super Walmart, I lived there, right? Like, that was where I went to school, and that was, like, home base was my mom, the hospital that my mom worked at. But then the farm that we grew up, that the horse farm was, like, 40 minutes away in the mountains, like, deep in the mountains. And so that was more like where I'm living now, where you had to drive, except for maybe I'm living in an even more rural area, because to the nearest, Floyd is 30 minutes from where I live. Stewart, Virginia is 30 minutes from where I live. Hillsville's 30 minutes. And the town that I live in is 10 minutes away, and we have two gas stations and a restaurant, like a cafe. We did do a coffee shop, though, like, just recently. That's it. So it's, like, it's different in that, like, you know, I used to walk to the local YMCA, but then, like, when we were at the farm, you didn't go anywhere because there was nothing around. So it's just, you were just stuck there. And you ate hot dogs and watched whatever VHS TV show was available if you didn't want to play outside.
Is it, would you say there's, like, a social difference at all? Like,
yeah, for sure. For sure. It's interesting. So, like, where I live, like, my current living situation, so I really believe in, like, leveraging, like, privileges, right? And so the privileges I have are my whiteness and financial privileges, land, inheriting land is the, like, your biggest privilege. So I am currently leveraging my land privilege by engaging in land sharing. So I share the land with a couple other people, including two other farmers. So, and that was my biggest community, was like the social life. The community was like the biggest thing that was making me not move there for 10 years or 7 years or however many years I was interested in moving there, but nobody was going to move with me because I'm single. I don't have a partner. And my mom wasn't going to move there. Like, none of my family was going to move there. There was no house on the property. Just some rundown barns and, like, no neighbors. Since then, somebody's moved into the house my mom grew up in. And, like, it's a family there, and they're real close. And then there's another woman who built a house up on the hill since I became interested, and I'm really close friends with her. So, and then, like, I had a friend who was interested in moving to the farm with me, and so we moved there together in 2020, and, like, we only had each other, really, and then the one neighbor that we were kind of getting to know. And then last year I had a friend move out because they needed a place to live for the summer. And then I met these two farmers on Instagram, this couple that were looking for a forever home, and they were interested in Virginia. And they came to the farm twice, and we talked a bunch. And they moved out there in August, and they're building a farm out there. So there's a community, which is really incredible, there. And it was very easy it felt really easy for me to, like, integrate myself into there's a huge community across the county of, like, young farmer people, which is amazing. And so we have gatherings on the farm, and I have a ton of friends. I've got friends in Roanoke and Blacksburg, and they come visit me all the time. So it's interesting. Like, I live in the middle of nowhere, but I actually have to, like, kind of tell people not to come for a couple weeks because I'm, like, tired of talking to people and seeing them, which is pretty wild. Except for in the wintertime. Nobody wants to come out in the winter. But growing up in Maysville, I had a ton of friends because school. What is school? And then, like, out at the farm, it was just me and my brother. And then any, like, kids that were camping at the campground, maybe. But even then, you know, it's like people are there for, like, 2 days or something. So it's like community for me growing up was, like, my brother was my best friend. And it was like we only had each other. And then, yeah, it's probably like a typical community in my hometown. So, yeah.
One question that now we'll get into the queer stuff.
Sure.
Was what was your first introduction to LGBTQ? Just the idea of that.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's see. I remember. I remember using the word gay, but not really knowing what it meant, right? Like, it meant something, like you were making fun of something when you used the word. I'm like, older, right? So nobody than you. So it was, like, less of a, people, like, didn't get corrected on it, right? But I remember in, I feel like it was, like, so when I was in high school, I'm sure that when you were in high school, you did, like, debates, like, in your history class or your political science class or whatever.
Yeah.
We did debates, and gay rights was like, a political issue that we debated. Mm-hmm. And I remember that being kind of, like, the first time that I really thought, that I realized that, like, being gay, like, some people thought it was bad. Like, really bad, where they, like, didn't want people to have rights. And so, like, I kind of, like, knew about it, but it didn't really, like, it wasn't, like, an important thing or something that anybody really talked about. But then I remember, like, being in class and having people just be so, like, emotional about how bad it was. And being, like, shocked. Because, like, I was like, what are you... This is not politics. This is, like, human. This is just, like, people living their life. It doesn't affect you at all. I don't understand why this is, like, a political issue that we're debating in class. So that was, like, the first time that I realized that it was, like, bigger than just existing.
Yeah. As you grew up, and, like, going into college and everything, how did that self-discovery kind of happen?
Well, so I consider myself bi, and that wasn't a thing when I was growing up. Being bi wasn't a thing. It was either one or the other. Even though everybody used the LGBT, nobody ever talked about the B. Like, it was just, like, didn't exist. You were either gay or you were straight. That's still the case to a degree, I think, in, like, a lot of circles. It's changing, but, like, you know, I told my dad I was dating a girl, and he, like, thought I was gay, you know? Like, he was confused when I broke up with her, and then started dating a guy, and then broke up with him, and my brother was like, yeah, Liza just broke up with this guy, and my dad was like, what? Thought she was gay. It's like, no, Dad, she's bi. You know, just, like, doesn't understand. So anyways, I didn't know any bi people. And so for a long time, I just was straight. And, like, gender queerness was, like, not on my radar until, like, 2000, maybe, like, 19. 2019. What is that, like, 4 years ago?
Yeah, about 4 years ago.
Yeah. That wasn't even on my... Maybe 2018. Maybe, like, I'd heard a little bit about it. But I didn't really, like, hold it in. Like, I didn't really let it in as, like, an idea until, like, 2019. I remember because it was, like, a person... Like, one of my friends that I met, a new friend, when I moved to Lynchburg, who's trans, and was like, non-binary people are a thing. And I was like, what? And he was also like, bi people are a thing, Liza. And I was like, oh, really? He was like, yeah. I was like, oh. Because we met at the Diversity Center in Lynchburg. So here's the funny thing, is that, like, I thought I was straight and cis for a really long time. But I kept going to, like, queer spaces as an ally, right? Mm-hmm. So I would, like, go to the LGBT at Virginia Tech. I was in a drag show, like, I was going to all their parties, but all the lesbians were like, Liza, we know you're straight, so you gotta, like, tell people that you're straight, or all the lesbians are gonna, like, wanna date you, or something, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So there was nobody really allowed that, like, even the queer community didn't allow me to explore my sexuality, which is sad, right? Like, I had to pick one. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there was, like, sort of a patriarchal, like, streak in that, right? It was like, you don't tell these people that you're unavailable, then they're gonna not be able to help themselves, or, you know, whatever. Mm. It's like the same shit that happens with men. It's like, you need to tell them your intentions. It's like, all right, okay. I'm just trying to, like, live here. Just trying to exist. Figure out who I am as a human being at 20. So anyways, I always, like, sought out queer spaces. And when you go into queer spaces, perhaps you know this or have experience, you go into queer spaces and, like, people like to introduce yourself. You introduce yourself with your identity. Like, sometimes. Maybe that's not, like, a thing that people do anymore, but, you know, I used to go places and they'd be like, introduce yourself. Like, what's your name? What's your pronouns? Well, people didn't really ask pronouns back then. It was more like, what's your gender and your sexual orientation? Which is, like, such an interesting way to introduce yourself. So I would always go into spaces and be like, hey, I'm Liza. I don't really, like saying this, but I guess I'm straight and I guess I'm cis. And, like, I did that next to my friend in Lynchburg, the Diversity Center. And he, like, we had just moved there at the same time. So, like, we lived kind of close to each other. So we were like, let's be friends. So then we started hanging out, and he was like, yeah, I heard it. Like, what do you mean? Like, you guess you're this, and you guess you're that. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. It just always feels so weird. And he's like, you know, bi people are real. And I was like, yeah. And then I started, like, really reflecting on, like, a lot of my experiences as a kid and realizing that they were gay. Super gay. Like, so gay. I was like, the first person I ever hooked up with was a girl. And I didn't tell anybody about it. It wasn't, like, in front of people, you know, in this, like, performative way. It just, like, happened. And, like, I hated being referred to as a girl when I was a kid. So, yeah. So, anyways, that was amazing. So, like, my big, like, realization that I was, like, queer was 4 years ago when my friend, who's, like, super queer, like, the queerest person maybe I've ever met. That's true. he just, like, held space for me while I, like, had this huge realization about myself.
Just rethought your whole life.
Yeah, I mean, just, like, deep reflection. And I kept being like, yeah, I just realized, like, this thing was a thing. And he was just like, what the fuck, Liza? How did you not know that you were gay? So anyways, I'm cursing a lot on this recording.
That's okay.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Did that answer your question? I don't know if that answered the question.
No, that's great. Is that just not really having that community growing up, not even knowing it was a thing until very recently, and that you've kind of, like, formed it for yourself.
Yeah.
When you're really allowed to.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I feel like now I have this, like, really interesting group of friends who all identify as queer, which is, like, an interesting shift, right? Queer, like, the word queer wasn't really used in my world until, I think that's the biggest thing, is, like, this word queer is like, new, as in, like, 5 years old for me. Mm-hmm. And because I never identified as gay or a lesbian, I didn't identify as trans, I know a lot of non-binary people do identify as trans. I still don't necessarily do, even though I know it's like allowed to be under that umbrella. But yeah, I was like, but the word queer is just so beautiful because it's so like I don't know, it's like an ethereal thing that you just get to like swim in and like find your identity in these like weird floaty pieces, and then it can change and go over here, and it's really beautiful. So all the people that I hang out with are queer. They're not like I have like maybe one friend that identifies as gay, but also queer, you know.
Yeah.
A close friend, I would say. I have a lot of friends floating out there in the world.
So you've explored more queer spaces and just formed that community for yourself. Is that including on the flower farm?
Yeah, so the two farmers are queer that moved out there that are starting a farm. So my friend that moved out to the farm with me to help start the farm is queer. Identifies as non-binary. And so like we moved out there, and then my friend who moved out there because she needed a place to live, she identifies as gay, and went through that transition on the farm too, which was amazing, like realizing that she was gay. It's like, it's amazing. This land in particular is like holding space for gayness and queerness in a way. Like I've actually had multiple people like start exploring their queerness like on this land, including myself, you know, to a degree. So, this land is queer. The farm is gay.
What kind of flowers do you grow on the farm?
Gay ones.
Gay ones.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I mean, maybe not.
Just very colorful?
Yeah, colorful. All the flowers. I have a planting chart. I could list all the flowers for you if you wanted me to. But I have half an acre. I grow a lot of dahlias. Because I love them, and they're amazing. And I grow zinnias, and celosia, and gumfrina, and amaranth, and scabiosa, and snapdragons, and stock, and ranunculus, and tulips, and daffodils, and peony. You know, just like, I grow it all, as much as I can.
All the colors of the rainbow.
All the colors of the rainbow. All the colors, yeah. Yeah, oh my god, I love it so much.
So you say that before that you come into the city a lot, or city of Roanoke, and so what do you do, like, in Roanoke?
I don't come to Roanoke a lot, actually. I don't know if I said that, but I don't come a lot. I come to Roanoke, and I mostly come to see friends. The pandemic has made it hard to like want to go into public spaces, right? And like that's why you come to a city, is to like go to bars and like go to the art gallery and like go to gatherings, right? Because like I live in the middle of nowhere and there's, you know, nothing to do. Well, nothing like this. It's just different. I'll spend all day petering around my farm and be perfectly happy because I have so much to do. So it's like not like there's nothing to do there. But, you know, like, I used to... This is another thing. It's like, when I was in college, I used to go to the park all the time. All the time. Like, all the time. We would all jump in a big car and pregame and show up at the park at, like, midnight or one and like partying for 2 hours and then drive home. When I was in college, when I was straight.
When you were straight, going to the park.
Going to the park as a straight person. So I've been to the park like twice as a not college, like since I graduated college. Which is pretty sad. But, and then like, yeah, weirdly, so my best friend lives here who's not queer. And then like just somehow I like have built this like queer community. And then I've got another friend that just moved here recently, and then I'm starting to slowly meet people like, your professor and some other people in the community, and yeah, it's beautiful. I love this, like, I love this community. And
just one that you've built yourself and been able to include everyone.
What do you mean?
As in, like, because you weren't included, like, or is that you weren't allowed to be yourself before, and now you've maybe created yourself?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I pass, right? Like, that's the thing, is, like, I'm, like, a queer person, but I, you know, pass as, like, a straight cis person. And so, and I have all these, like, friends that have known me, and my family who's known me through my whole life, and I've really just started coming out in the last, like, I started having realizations about myself, like, 4 years ago or 3 years ago or whatever, and then I really started coming out, like, in the last year, you know, and, like, had my first, like, 2 years ago, I guess, almost 2 years ago was when I had my first, like, visibly queer relationship, even though I've had very, very queer relationships in the past, also very telling, right? You know, and yeah, and like the gender, it's like when I dated a girl, nobody batted an eye. But then when I'm telling people that I'm non-binary and I prefer them not to refer to me as like a lady or a girl, that is a, like a little bit more jarring for people. And so that is context for like how, you know, I sought out this queer community that I didn't have to explain myself to at all. And like there were no assumptions made, right? So it was like people were like asking me rather than me having to correct them. And then, like, also holding space for me to be like, I guess I don't even know how to talk about who I am as a human being, and, like, I feel really weird, and, like, this isn't my experience, and, like, I'm coming to this as a 30-year-old person, and everyone being like, calm down, it's okay, like, we're gonna, you know, you are who you are, and that's beautiful, and it's great, and, like, all you have to do is exist in whatever truth is comfortable for you in any given context. And so, like, the queer community that I have now versus the queer community that I had in college that didn't really hold space for that at all, who I love dearly, all those people were really special to me, but it was just, like, it was just, you know, your reality is your reality, and, like, the reality back then was that bi people didn't exist, even though they did, right? That was, like, a more of, like, a framework, the way people see the world, right? So, anyways. Yeah, so it's, like, two very different queer... it's, like, very different communities, right? So then I, like, have this amazing community that's, like, super supportive, and then I have this, like, hella straight community that I'm, like, starting to, like, pull into my truth, and, like... So it's, like, this interesting... Yeah, like, I'm trying to... I'm not 100%... all truthful with my straight community, straight cis community, whereas like the queer community is like, we see you for exactly who you are. So it's interesting.
Why do you think you can't be who you are with the straight cis community?
Energy levels, mostly. You know, it's exhausting to have to hold space for people who feel threatened by how you want to be seen. You know, my dad kind of freaked out a little bit when I told him I was bi. Like, he didn't, like, freak out at me directly, like, but he had an internal struggle with it and, like, lashed out at me in different ways. And that's just exhausting, you know? And then also to be, like, over and over again, like, okay, please don't call me a woman, please don't call me a woman, please don't call me a girl or lady. You know what's been really helpful is social media. Instagram. I like started saying these things on Instagram in my stories, just being like blanket, like just so I don't have to tell like each individual person. Like I just be like, all right, I'm non-binary and like I don't have pronoun preference, but please don't call me a girl and please don't call me a lady. Instead, you can call me friend or love or human. And people are changing. Like, that's amazing. But then some people, I know you've seen my story and you're still calling me a girl. So it's like, how many times do you want to do that? How many times do you want to come out to somebody and correct them? So I guess it's not that I'm not holding back from people. Like, I feel very open. Like, I've talked to my mom about being non-binary. She loved my ex-girlfriend, you know, like, very supportive of my sexuality and, like, very, you know, super supportive of, like, pronouns and stuff, for the most part. And, let's see, I forgot where I was going with this. Oh, but, you know, she still calls me her daughter, which is fine, you know, because I am, like, in the context of our relationship and the way that we've related to each other for so long and the way that the world relates to us. So it's like, I don't know, it's sort of this interesting, like, how much do I want to push? Like, and, you know, how much? So it's like, it's not that I'm hiding things from my straight community. They know how I feel and who I am, but it's like they don't know. It's not their context, right? They're not queer, so they don't, like, understand the importance of pronouns, and they don't understand the importance of, like, the language that we use. They don't understand that when they call me a lady, it makes me not feel seen. And so having to explain that and, like, have them understand it is just, like, so much energy, and I don't want to do it sometimes. I'm tired. But, yeah.
Do you think social media has helped educate some people?
Oh my god. Have you, you know, Alok? Alok? Mm. Oh my god. You gotta find Alok on, I found them on Facebook. I can't believe I found them on Facebook. This was like, okay, so maybe that's
when
I...
How do you spell them?
Alok, A-L-O-K. They're a, like, non-binary person that built, they're a poet, fashionista, which I don't care about fashion at all, but this person was the non-binary, like, I don't know, they were my non-binary icon. They were the person that made me realize, like, listening to their poetry and reading their posts and witnessing the way that they move through the world was how I realized I was non-binary. And, like, we have completely different experiences because they're brown and AMAB and, like, from a city. Yes, that's them. Yeah. And, you know, our, I think, first generation U.S. citizen. So, even though, and, like, are interested in fashion and, like, live in New York City, and I'm, like, this grungy farmer AFAB, white AFAB person, you know, with, like, inherited land, you know, like, which is so different, but the things that they say and the way that they talk about being non-binary and, like, the way that they see themselves and, like, the way that, like, I just had this, they really helped me realize, like, how constructed gender was. And I found them in 2017. And so they were like, they were huge for me. And this was before I even got an Instagram. I didn't even get an Instagram until like 2019, I think. So they like had paid advertisements on Facebook. And somehow I like, when Facebook paid advertisements first started, right? Like that's when they just kind of started really ramping up. So 2017 was like through Facebook is where I found out about non-binariness, you know, and really learned And then when I got Instagram and learned about hashtags, whoo, man, hashtags. Learned about hashtags, and I found queer people. That's how I found my queer farmer friends that now live on the farm. There's a hashtag called Queer Farmers. So I, like, follow that, and, like, found, now I have, a, like, an Instagram queer farmer community of, like, people that we know each other. Like, we don't never met, you know? So, yeah.
So the online queer community is also very expensive and very helpful.
So, yeah. The Queer Farmers is a smaller community. Like, it's very specific, right? It's a very specific community, especially in the farming world. Like, oh my god. But randomly, Floyd has a million queer farmers. It's so weird and amazing. But yeah, like, queer farmers in particular is, like, that's... Because, like, queer city people are amazing. Love them. But, like, I'm not a city person, you know? And then, like, rural people, you run the gamut, you know, it's like, whoa, it's a lot of different kinds of rural people. And just, like, flat rural people, right? Very so, different.
What are different kinds of rural people?
Well, I mean, we were... There were two Biden signs and... I don't even know how many mile radius. One of them was on our farm during the election, and the other one was, like, somebody, I don't know, like a mile from us. And then otherwise it was just, like, a sea of Trump signs. And there's still quite a few Trump signs still up. A year or two later, you know? Like, people, like, there's a, I have a neighbor that has a Trump sign that is, like, been in their yard for a really long time, and they put a spotlight light, you know, like, one of those, like, spotlights that you use to light up a sign. Like, it's just a little plastic flimsy one, you know, like, a little plastic flimsy Trump sign.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that big. And they put, a like, a spotlight on it that lights up at night. And, like, I hate to let politics define people, because we put a Biden sign up, but I, you know, I was like, we're only doing this to try to encourage people to vote. It's not like I felt super pumped about putting a Biden sign out front. But to just show people that there was, like, some other form of thought process besides Trump-iness. You know, so there's, like, it's different, you know? And, like, that's another part of, like, being queer in a rural area is that, like, when I was dating, you know, when I was in a very visibly queer relationship, I was a little nervous, you know, because we had really just moved there. This was, like, 2020 when I started dating her, and...
right at the heat of everything.
Yeah, it was 2020. I didn't really know my neighbors. I was not out to them. You know, like, we didn't have a community or resources, and, like, everybody thought that Kevin, who's, like, you know, is prison's male, was, like, we were together. He's the one who moved out with me. And, like, my neighbor who I'm friends with now, and who knows now that I'm bi and knows now that I was dating that girl, met her multiple times and was, like, she was, like, wow, you must really be really good friends for her. Because she lived in D.C., and she was coming down from D.C., dating, queer dating in a rural area. We lived 5 hours away from each other. So my neighbor was like, oh, wow, you must be really good friends if you're traveling, you know, versus, like, somebody sees Kevin, like, mowing the lawn, and they're like, oh, y'all are married, right?
Mm.
You know, so, like, the assumption, you know, like...
Assumptions of straightness.
Assumptions of straightness, which that's everywhere. That's not, like, necessarily just rural, but I think what makes living in a rural area different is that your community is extremely small, very limited. I mean, I have two neighbors, right? And I don't... neither one of them ever put a political sign out. Neither one of them ever mentioned gay people, trans people. No, like, you know, like, Kevin and I were both, like, very intensely listening every time either one of them talked to see if they would offer any hint of where they stood politically, and it never happened. Never. Until, like, a year after knowing one of my neighbors, and we were talking about dating, because her husband died, and so we were talking about dating, and I just sort of, like, had like, two glasses of wine, and casually mentioned that I was bi, and she just had, like, a, oh, okay, well, that means you have, like, twice as many chances of meeting somebody. And I was like, oh, all right. That's great. Okay. Also, a lot of energy, right? Like, coming out to people, you don't know how they're going to act. So, stress. Stressful. But, yeah, so, I mean, like, what if she's, like, a huge asset to me and, like, my existence out there? You know, we, like, borrow each other's time and tools and our friends. And, like, if she was homophobic or transphobic, like, that would be, like, 50% of my community cut. Boom. Whereas, like, when you're in a city, somebody doesn't like you because you're gay, who cares? Somebody right there. There's, like, you know, 20 people in line waiting to be your friend. Whereas, like, in a rural area, you just don't have that. And so, like, I still haven't come out to some of my neighbors because I literally have no idea how they feel. And they did, like, they kind of have, like, stopped reaching out to us ever since because we were trying to figure out how to, like, so, like, I would have come out to them eventually, you know, like, it's sort of one of those things where it's, like, if I end up with somebody who passes and we're, like, in a hetero relationship, I don't have to come out to anybody. But, like, if not, it was like, okay, I'll come out to people you know, it's like, present to my partner, you know. But the two that moved out there, the two farmers that moved out there, are very visibly queer. And so I was, like, talking with them about how we wanted to, like, approach the subject with our neighbors. And, like, I wanted, you know, like, I'm like, do you want me to tell them? Like, how should we do it? Like, so we ended up having, like, a gathering of local queer people at the farm. And I invited them to the party because we were, like, kind of inviting each other to parties back and forth. And I was like, yeah, we're having a small party, invited, like, to introduce Morgan and Ronaldo to the, like, local gay and trans community of the New River Valley, if you want to come and say hi. And they were like, thanks. And then that was pretty much it. And we kind of haven't heard from them since. There's some other issues, but. So I don't know. And the things I don't know. Like, are they just uncomfortable with us existing there? Or do they not care? Like, some people, I think, don't care, but they don't know how to interact with you. And so they just kind of ignore you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're just, like, confused. They don't have, like, context for you. And so they don't know how to relate to you. And so they just don't talk to you. Which I think one of the people on the farm is not white. And that's been his experience as well. Like, with certain people, they're just like, I don't know how to relate to you because you're not a white person, and so I'm just going to go talk to this white person instead. So I imagine that that's possible. So I don't actually know if they're homophobic or transphobic, or they just, like, don't know how to interact with queer people. I have no idea.
So you think it's important that, with, like, social media and stuff, that people could be more open-minded to learn more, so you don't have to spend all this energy teaching?
I do. Yeah, I mean, I don't publish. I would delete Facebook if I could, because I hate it. But I have to have it for my business. And one friend who refuses to get on Instagram. And I have a hard time communicating with her otherwise. But anyways, I don't post anything like that on Facebook. I have too much history, too many friends, family members. I don't even know who my friends are. I don't know who would see it. I don't even know how public it is. I, like, just have completely just totally stepped away from Facebook. But for Instagram, I, like, have, you know, I have a private account now. I used to have a public account. Private, and got close friends and my rest of them. Very selective about who follows me. So that's, like, I've got my, like, personal account, then I've got my business account. my personal account, it's like very much so like queer and political and random thoughts of the day. And then I don't post any of that stuff. I do have on my website, and anytime I introduce myself on Instagram, I include that I don't have pronoun preference. But that's pretty much as far as it goes. And then I always use, like, preferred pronouns for my friends when I refer to them. Like, I have a lot of non-binary friends who only use they-them pronouns, and so, like, if I take a picture of them on and, like, post it, I'll use their pronouns. So it's very, like, subtle and, like, normalized as far as, like, my business social media goes.
Do you think it's important to normalize queerness?
Of course. Oh, of course, of course, of course. The first, like, piece of, like, marketing, like, I had a rack card that's, like, this big with some pictures, because I do weddings. I had three pictures on the rack card, and one of them was of two women getting married that I did their flowers a couple years ago. So I had, like, you know, two hetero couples and then a queer couple on my rack card. So it's very important to me to represent in that, like, really important. And to, like, include my website also. I wish I had more photos to share of queer couples and queer people in general. And I wish that I could make, of course I want to normalize queerness.
Yeah. It's important to make, like, a safe space to, like, project that you and your little community that you've built is a safe space.
That is what I want to do. I had somebody come out to the farm last year in the spring because she was interested in volunteering on the farm. I was like, okay, well, I didn't know her at all. She just, like, emailed me out of the blue. I was like, okay, well, why don't you come and we'll walk the farm and we'll talk and see what if it seems like something you'd want to come and do every week. And she was like, okay. So we, like, came, she met a couple of my friends that were there just, like, having lunch one day, and we walked down to the farm and looked at everything, talked about kind of, like, some tasks, very farmy. And then we were walking back up the hill, and I was like, well, like, why don't you think about it, like, if this is something you're interested in, I just want you to know that, like, there's something that's really important that you need to know if you decide you want to come and work here every day, and that is that this is a very queer farm. There's a lot of, like, non-binary and trans people that work here, or live here, or visit here, or volunteer here. You know, this is my identity, like, you know, so you really can't, like, if you're uncomfortable being around queer people in their various identities and pronouns, like, it's not going to be a good fit for you. And she was like, wow, thank you so much for saying that. I have a gay cousin. I'm totally down with gay people. And I was like, all right, cool, okay. And then, like, she was one of the people that really had this, like, deep reflection about her gender identity after she, like, after we, like, had a lot of conversations and she was coming back every week. And so, and I'm hoping at some point to, because I don't have a lot of people that I don't know coming to the farm and spending a lot, like, if it's going to be a volunteer, I'm going to have that disclaimer of, like, space is queer, if you're not down, you can't come. But I have a lot of clients that come and pick up flowers on the farm. A couple people that are, like, there's one lesbian couple, married and lesbian couple that live in Metazidan, amazing, like, I know, like, multiple gay people, like, older people in Metazidan that are, like, grounded there, never gonna leave. It's, like, incredible. So they come and pick up flowers every week through the CSA, but, like, I'm sure that's just gonna keep getting more, like, more people. And so, like, there's, I want to Like, I have this vision, because I'm still building everything. Like, things are still, like, a wreck. You know, I still have to, like, we just got water, like, 10 months ago on the property. You know, like, it's, we're still building things. But there's, like, the building that has where people pick up flowers if they come for a wedding or whatever. I have this, like, vision of having kind of, like, queerness kind of there, like, in the building, right? Like, very visible things. Maybe not, like, a flag, even though I do have a flag on the back of my truck. So whenever I drive my farm truck around, there's, like, a nice, the one with the arrow, the trans.
Yeah.
POC mm-hmm. arrow. So that's, like, on the back of my truck. So if I drive around town, there's that, which feels really good. So, like, I want it to be a space where people, like, if they pick up flowers and they really look around, they're like, oh, okay, I can see kind of where this person stands as far as queerness and, like, historical perspective, colonialism, you know. I'd like to, like, figure out a way to do that. That is, like, not performative, but feels very honest.
How do you think you would do that?
Well, there's this one picture of a loc that I'm, like, in love with. It's, like, the one of their first pictures, portraits, I think, that I ever saw. And it's like a profile of them, and then they have, like, flowers all over their head, like, this amazing floral, like, or maybe it's, like, a collar. There's, like, this, I guess I can't quite envision it in my brain, but it's so pretty that I would like to get a portrait of that and frame it and put it on my wall somewhere, because that's what people do to their idols, right?
Yeah.
So I'd like that, which that feels very, like, queer to me. That's pretty much as far as I've gotten. Maybe, like, a sign, you know, like, they have those signs that they're like, live, laugh, love, this kitchen is for dancing. I want a sign that says, like, respect people's pronouns, or something like that, you know, but, like, in that font, maybe, no, the font's terrible, something like that. I just have thought about things like that.
Hmm. You even mentioned about colonialism. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, like, my land is traditional Tutelo land, you know, like, and my, you know, ancestors are white, and they were given stolen land, and I think that's really important to talk about regularly, and I do have that acknowledgement on my website. So, like, my website has some, like, visible stuff, you know, thoughtful things. And, you know, it's not all, like, rainbows and sunshine. It's, like a, you know, I very explicitly say on the website that, like, I have access to this land through a violent past. And, like, I want to work, you know, toward healing that and making reparations. I don't know if I use the word reparations, actually. I'd have to go back and look at it, because I wrote it, like, 2 years ago. But, yeah, so the two farmers, that it's really important to me to, like, try to pull in, like, a land back element to what we're doing on the land. And so the two farmers that have come to the land agree with that. Like, we had these really big, intense talks about, like, land ownership, and the eventual goal is to put the land into a trust, so I don't own it, nobody owns it, and we're just, like, stewarding the land. And then we want to create, like, a land back tax is kind of where we are right now, which is where you basically pay a little extra money, and it goes towards a local tribe, hopefully the tribe, but, you know, not all tribes have a organization around them. And so as far as my research has gone, there is not an organization for the Tutelo people. But there is a language program in North Carolina for the Tutelo language. And that is like, and so the Tutelo traditions and language is being housed under a bigger tribe. It's like organization and recognition. And so I don't know if it'll happen this year, but like soon, maybe next year, we're going to make connection with that tribe to just kind of like let them know, like, we're interested in supporting your language program, or like however it feels appropriate, and like this is kind of what we're thinking, like, what do you think, is it something that we can do? And yeah, and go from there. So we haven't made the connection yet. It's like in our brains, but like there's so much going on. It's like, I mean, like I said, we just got water, you know. It's like, so we're just, right now we're just existing, like we're just like day to day existing, trying to build our businesses and like keep our farms afloat and like stay alive on the land. Who's to say that that priority is appropriate, you know? But that's what we're doing now. It's like we're doing our best. So it is in the eventual goal to do that.
Mm. But it's very admirable that you've built this community that you have. That seems very loving and accepting.
Yeah, we're doing our best. You know, it hasn't been easy. Communication is like the hardest thing, right? And we're all human beings, and so we all fuck up. And we're working on accountability. We had a challenge last year where somebody said something that they knew was weird, but they never addressed it. And then, like, somebody else was like, wow, that was really fucking weird, and I did not like it. And so then there was, like, this thing where the person who was like, oh, I don't feel safe, came to me and was like, this happened, and, like, I didn't feel safe. And we were all like, oh, my, like, I was like, yeah, that was really weird. I'm so sorry I didn't address it in the moment, you know. And then I went to the person who said the thing, and I was like, oh, I was like, do you want me to, like, what can I do to support you? Because I want you to feel safe here. And they were like, maybe just talk to them about it. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. Like, can I mention that you said something, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, yes, please. So then I went to the person and I was like, 2 weeks ago when you said this thing, this person felt really uncomfortable. And they were like, oh my God, I'm so glad you said something, because I felt really weird about it and I should have said something about it in the moment, you know? So it was like, that was like the first time that we had to have accountability, and it went so well. Like, I was like, I was nervous, and I realized that that was my whiteness, because this person, the person who said the thing was white, and the person who was uncomfortable was black, and the person said something weird about race, and they knew it was weird, but they didn't say anything, you know, like it wasn't addressed in the moment. So then we all three of us had this realization, like, okay, we all thought it was weird, and none of us said something until later. So, like, we all know now that we can say something, you know, and we all want to be held accountable, which is really beautiful. And so we're, that's the hardest part, you know, is, like, communicating, you know, because, like, I've lived with a lot of people, I've moved around a lot, I've had a million roommates, I've had amazing roommates, I've had terrible roommates, I've had roommates that had horrible communication skills, horrible. And so I feel really strongly about communication, and accountability is something that I've really leaned into in the last couple of years, as far as, like, I'm holding people accountable when I need to, and I'm making it very clear that I want people to hold me accountable, and that, like, even though I may have a gut reaction, like, it's, I need them to do that for me. Like, I'll do my best to not be a shithead, you know. So and this community that I have feels the same way. I mean, it's like amazing. Like, we all want to be held accountable, and like, I'm witnessing people holding each other accountable, and it's really beautiful. So this community is, like, very intentional, not in, like, the intentional community that's, like, squishy and whatever. Like, we're, like, talking about hard stuff. you know, we're talking about, like, colonialism and, like, capitalism, and, like, we're not just, like, you know, we all believe in, like, the swirling magic of nature, for sure. Like, I 100% am, like, a hippie or whatever, you know. I believe in, like, spirits and fairies and all that stuff, but, like, also, like, that isn't all there is in the world. So it's beautiful, but it's hard, but it's beautiful. So, yeah.
So you think that if people were to open themselves to accountability and communication, do you think that would make it more safe for queer people?
Hey, we finished up a little party we were doing, and there's some extra food and stuff in classroom one if you want that.
Thank you.
We've got various things, some cheese, some fruit, some ice, latte, coffee, stuff like that, if you want some.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's in classroom one down.
All right, thank you.
Sorry about that.
We can edit that out later. It's no problem. They'll just be like...
We'll put it in the transcript.
I saw her walking up and I was like,
no.
So kind, but so unhelpful.
Okay, let me actually just write down the timestamp just for myself later.
We'll see it. It'll be pretty obvious. Talking about accountability, yes. So you think if accountability is a very important thing to have, not only in queer safe spaces, but everywhere?
Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, that would change a lot, right? Like, accountability would change... If we normalized accountability, right? And I think accountability is very gendered to, like the way, like... we even think about accountability and, like, who gets held accountable and, like, in the ways that they get held accountable and, like, in the ways that they're not held accountable. So, like, yeah. The jails would look very different if people were held accountable. You know? Like, the people that are in there would look very different. Just, like, a lot of things would change. I'm not saying that I support jails, but that was, like, kind of the first thing that came to my brain as far as, like, you know, racial inequities and also class inequities in jail systems and who gets held accountable and who doesn't, and also, like, who's there for no reason.
Yeah, I do agree that accountability would just make the, if people normalized accountability, normalized queerness, a very different place.
Mm-hmm. For sure. God. I know, and this whole idea, like, when my friend was held accountable for what they said, there was no defensiveness. Like, at all. There was no, like, feeling that they had to, like, hold on to some sort of righteousness, you know? And I think that's how accountability works, right? It's where you're just like, I fucked up, I'm sorry, you know? Like, normalizing fucking up. Like, normalizing, like, that there's no such thing as, like, a good person and a bad person. Like, we're all just, like, in our own realities and... we're humans. And, like, that, yeah, that's a really beautiful thing, and I think that's really strong in our community, which is really incredible.
Mm. Yeah. I think that is a lovely note to end on.
Great.
But I want to thank you for your time, Liza, and thank you for just sharing about your community and your story.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was nice.